Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk with a Doc, the show where we bring common questions to medical experts for insight and information. I'm Brendan Hooley, and joining me today is Dr. Mark Horton, Executive Medical Director of Surgical Services, Surgical Chair, and Attending Surgeon at Providence Swedish Surgical Specialists. We're here to talk about an exciting and groundbreaking procedure in the field of liver cancer treatment called histotripsy. We'll be discussing what this treatment is, how it compares to more traditional liver cancer treatments, and the impact it may have on cancer treatments in the future. So let's get started. Hello, Dr. Horton.
Hi, Brendan. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to meet you. Can you tell us a little about yourself and your work at Providence Swedish? And if you want, as well, like what brought you to this field?
I'm a Seattle native. I was born and raised here. I went to Blanchard High School and Carroll College in Helena, Montana, and then University of Washington School of Medicine before coming to Swedish for my surgical training. I've been here for 36 years. Surgery was clearly the thing for me because I needed, from a selfish standpoint, immediate gratification. I like to see problems and fix them and do that as soon as possible. And what brought me to Swedish is just Swedish's history. It was founded by a surgeon 114 years ago, and it's pretty much been the place in Seattle for surgery and for cancer. You know, Dr. Johansson recruited William Hutchison, who then went on to found the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center after his brother that was affiliated with Swedish initially. And so I've had the pleasure of being here for a third of those 114 years, because I've been here for 36 years. And so that's what brought me here and kept me here.
That's a truly impressive career track there. So knowing that Swedish is such a prominent figure in the world of surgery and cancer treatments, I suppose it's not much of a surprise that a new and novel treatment is emerging there. So let's talk about histotripsy. This was recently approved by the FDA to be a treatment for liver cancer. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it really is exciting. So also, full disclosure here, I'm not a physicist. So I'm going to try. I may be as a little confused about some of this stuff that I'm about trying to explain to you right now. But we have several things. I'm going to say tools in our toolkit that we can use to help someone with cancer. And right now, this particular device is limited and focused towards liver, though we can talk later about whether or not that's going to move on to other areas or not. But when we do that, when we think about what we have surgery, we have chemotherapy, we have ablation techniques, or all of the above, radiation therapy. This is yet one more device, one more opportunity for us, but it goes outside the realm of that. And so what's exciting about this technology is we've used sound waves or microwaves or all these other things in the past to attempt to destroy a tumor that we can't get to surgically because it's too close to vital organs with regard to bile ducts and blood vessels and the such. What this technology does is it's taken away the heat that we have with ablation and other things. And we can narrow it down right to the area of the lesion that we're interested in. And the effects of these waves, for a better sense, we can use them. They're very short duration, high frequency. And what they don't do is you don't get the thermal effect that you do with the other treatments that we've had in the past. So the best way I can describe it is we don't get the collateral damage around the good tissue that we want to leave behind. And that's going to be what's going to be the game changer, I think, as we go forward, is that our ability now to offer yet another opportunity to help patients in this setting.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. And it sounds like liver cancer in particular has been somewhat challenging to treat without that collateral damage you mentioned. Is that true?
It's true. And plus, you got to have your liver, right? And you wouldn't do things necessarily to transplant or something if you've got liver, you've got cancer elsewhere. One of the biggest problems we have is metastatic colon cancer to the liver. As surgeons, as physicians, we look upon fighting cancer on two fronts, right? There's a local front that we need to address. And then there's a systemic front where the cells have gone into the lymphatics and the bloodstream and gone to other places in the body. That's what chemotherapy is for. And so what gets hard for us is that if we've got a tumor in the liver that is clearly metastatic, which means we could have it other places, you don't want to go and do a large liver resection that is very questionable to the patient anyway, when there may be additional cells elsewhere that we don't know about. So if we have something in between those that we can use to destroy liver lesions, then that is where this is going to be such a big deal for patients, is because it's going to give us an opportunity to get after that, do something about it, and then see what else goes on elsewhere. And if that's successful, do, you know, use it again, or maybe treat something that we couldn't operate on and then treat the other part that we can operate on at the same time.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So is this a fairly novel way of treating cancer, or has this been used for treating other conditions in the body as well?
So we just got to talk about how novel it is, but the idea has been around for 20 years. And we've been doing and looking at all different aspects of this, but they haven't been able to, and again, I don't want to say weave in the fact that I'm not one of these researchers who developed this in Michigan, but what they were able to do is take that same wave technology and see over time what they could do to condense it and make it localized and get rid of all the thermal effect that I was talking about before. So it's progressed through. Right now, it's just only for liver lesions, but it's on the docket to be used other places. The trick for us and where our limitations are is because the way these waves are produced and put into the body, things can be in the way. Ribs can be in the way. Other organs can be in the way. So there's need for certain windows and stuff in order to get to this. But those are slowly over time, the researchers and the basic science people are finding ways around that. And that's why this is the first place. The liver is a relatively big organ. It's relatively set. It doesn't move around. We can get at most parts of it. But as we proceed, things like kidney and pancreas and other things are well within the realm of what this can do.
Wow. So it sounds like you view this new treatment as quite the game changer, yeah?
Yeah. And there's another part of it, Brendan, that I find just fascinating, I think, whether you're a physician or not. The other thing about this that appears to be something that's happening that we don't have a full grasp on and is being looked at, as those cells are destroyed in this lesion very finitely, and we can talk a little bit about how that works, but they're mechanically destroyed, there appears to be some sort of an immunologic release. And they're finding that patients who had, let's say, abdominal lesions from colon cancer and a mass in their liver, and the mass in their liver is taken care of with this, they're finding what they're calling an abscopal effect, where the lesions elsewhere in the body are also starting to shrink, ones that weren't ever treated. The look,
wow.
The look on your face was exactly the look on my face when I saw this research for the first time. Because if what we were saying before was a game changer, this is a game changer times 100. Again, I have a box of things I can offer patients. I'm a surgeon, so when you're a carpenter, everything looks like a nail, right? For me, it's to cut things out. But what we don't know then is that other systemic stuff where chemotherapy, you know, is a big part. Imagine if we had something where we could do that and in adjunct to that, have this abscopal effect that we could get from using the histotripsy. So I think that this is groundbreaking and the very beginning of something that I think is going to be great for cancer therapy going forward. And that's why we strive so hard. You know, we're now the first place in the West to have this, Western United States, excuse me. And the word's out. We're getting calls not only from all over the country, but from all over the world. And we have patients from Asia and elsewhere trying to see if they can get in, be evaluated for this. I really do believe that this is going to be a game changer.
Wow. With a treatment that appears to be already gaining quite a bit of popularity, I guess the next question to ask is, what makes a person a good candidate for this procedure?
We're still figuring that out. I'll be honest with you. And that's one of the things. I don't think the right answer is, I've got cancer, I'm going to call this number. But you definitely need to speak with your physician about it. Because what we want to do is use this resource in the most effective way that we've got, you know, the most reliable results from. I do want to underscore this. All the things I just told you, I'm very excited about, but this is very new. Mm-hmm. And so we need more and additional research from the clinical side of gathering all these cases, which we're in the process of doing, to see what happens and how it goes. But I think that this is something that anyone who's listening here or heard about this, you should talk to your physician, and we can, they can be in contact with us and we can help out. It probably wouldn't be perfect to just call the number and try to get on the schedule, because there's things we need. You know, we're going to need scanning. We're going to need to know what you already had done. We're going to need to know, you know, all these other things about how you were diagnosed. And particularly right now, from an FDA approval standpoint, this has to be only within your liver.
So you have said this is a fairly new treatment, and you're still collecting a lot of data about how it performs in patients. Has there been sort of a general success rate that you've been able to establish for this procedure?
What's been eye-opening is to have a pre-procedure CT scan, have treatment, and then the post-procedure CT scan, see sort of a black hole where that laser needs to be. So we've been doing it for the last few weeks to months. So again, us personally, we know what the creators of this have said, but we're now following up those people ourselves. We certainly know, and we have to be very careful, and that's why I was talking about there being kind of strict selection criteria as we do this. If you have known underlying, let's say, kidney disease or something from some other source, there may be, anytime you injure or destroy cells, things can get released that could clog up kidneys a little bit over a short period of time. So you need to keep people well hydrated. If they have underlying disease in that standpoint, those are people that we might be a little bit more careful and judicial in deciding that we're going to do. So mm-hmm. There's those kind of things. And we're trying to make sure, as we look back on our data in conjunction with, you know, HistoSonic, who created the device, and sharing data back and forth, so that we can come up with the appropriate level of folks that would be most beneficial. Brendan, this is like, you know, when you're going to go buy a new car, mm-hmm. and you kind of want to be the guy to have the very first car off the line, how cool that is, until you figure out that all the kinks haven't been worked out of it yet. And maybe it would have been cool to have been the 25th person with the car.
Right.
We don't want to be that way. And so we're trying to be very careful and judicious on who we pick and what we do. And so that's the only hesitation I have of, you know, bring it all. You know, we're gonna make sure this is safe and sound, because we're talking about people who already have a substantial illness, and we want to do nothing but make those folks better, not worse.
Of course. And so you're looking for folks that may not have too many underlying complications, but after the procedure is done, assuming that you've got a good candidate in the room, what's the post-op and recovery like? Is it? I'm guessing it's better than some of the more traditional treatments that you have available.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, the only reason we're literally not just doing somebody and sending them home is because we haven't done this very much before, right? So we're at least keeping people overnight, but we foresee there's really no reason, like, people have to go to under a general anesthetic and go in the OR, but that's what we're doing right now. But this is all, there's no incisions. This is all external beam. We all, sound waves rather. It's, if you had kidney stones that were chronic, we would bring you in and do a lithotripsy, right? Our urologist would, and they'd break those stones up with sound waves and send you home. We may get to that point, because right now, all that's happening is people are getting treated. They're getting an X marked on them where the ultrasound shows where we want to bring the probe up to the abdominal wall. But literally, the patient lays on a table. There's a plastic bucket, for a better sense of the word, that kind of fits over the patient with this membrane, so that the water can sit directly on the patient, the membrane that's on the patient, and then the waves are shot through that water, and then that's removed, and there's nothing on the patient, and the patient doesn't have a feeling even of soreness that they've had something go on. So
wait, nothing hurts?
Nothing hurts. You know, they may feel something different, but there's no incision, there's no bruise, you know, they haven't been pounded on. This has been a very, very precise measurement of coordinates using ultrasound and CT to get right at where this lesion is. And then these waves go through in a, like I said, very high frequency, very short duration. The best way I can describe this is that if you just took one of the cells out and just kept squishing it and pulling it and squishing it and pulling it until it burst, that's what these waves are doing to this thing. If you could see the videotape, they refer to it as a bubble cloud. And this little bubble cloud is just because of the coordinates that we've given it, is marked to fill just in the volume of the tumor. And it just beats it up until all the cells burst and die. And so then the follow-up CT scan essentially shows nothing there, except maybe a like this black scar. And it's that release then of those immunologic agents that I actually find, I mean, I'm not a basic scientist and I'm a surgeon, but I find so fascinating that those then get released into the patient's bloodstream and go and help knock off other tumor cells and other metastatic lesions elsewhere in the body. Well, like, wow, right? I mean, you know, one of my friends and I were talking, like, great, Hortz, you're going to do something so that we don't have to operate anymore. You know what I mean? So I don't think we're that far, but that certainly, definitely will make a difference on those things that maybe we couldn't have got to and couldn't have operated on before and couldn't have given ablation therapy for because they were located where they were. And that's, I think, is a big plus.
Yeah, it really sounds like you're getting sort of a gift with purchase when you go through this treatment. That makes me wonder, are there any risks involved? It sounds pretty straightforward.
I never say never about anything. If you were to come to me for an operation, you needed your gallbladder out or a hernia fixed or something, you know, I need to discuss the risks and benefits with you. And so there's a risk to every single thing I do to somebody because I'm changing you some way from how you were before it ended. What our goal and our promise to everybody, regardless of whether it's a cancer or a benign, you know, procedure, is that we want to make sure the benefits markedly outweigh the risks. So are there risks? There's risk. Humans aren't perfect. Could not get all the lesion. We could miss the lesion with regard to the coordinates. We could, like I said before, release, you know, when cells get damaged, they release substances that can clog up other things like your kidneys and other things. And so you could have some downstream effects from this. We don't know what we don't know. We haven't been doing this for 20 years, you know, and maybe we find out that 10 years from now, things come back. I doubt that. But when I sit down and talk to someone, again, I say these are all the known possible things. I think it's extremely unlikely, but you also could get this and that. We could not know that you had a cardiac issue and you had some kind of cardiac issue post-op. So the risk right now appear to be extremely minimal. It's new, and we're looking at every case backwards and forwards to make sure that we're not seeing anything that's coming up on a normal, regular basis. But so far, the risk appear to be markedly low, and the gains appear to be well worth those markedly low risks.
That's all really great news. Do you see any obstacles that remain in the widespread adoption of histotripsy as a treatment for liver cancer?
Well, you know, it's kind of tricky when you have a new thing, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what to charge and how to charge, and insurance companies don't know if they're going to cover it, and it's, whether it's still experimental and all these other kind of things. And I absolutely hate putting any angst on a patient about that. Mm-hmm. And I personally am willing to, I can't believe I'm going to say this in public, but, you know, do things for free if that's what it comes down to. But this is a high-tech deal. And so we are working out. Those are some obstacles as trying to work out with the payers and stuff about what kind of codes these are given and what kind of expenses there are and such things like that. Don't want people who have this burden on their mind already trying to figure out the burden of financials. That's just the trick right now, because this is a brand new technology. So we're working on that to the best of everyone's ability.
Well, we can all certainly hope that the cost for a treatment like this comes down over time, especially if, like you were saying, that it could eventually become something that's almost an outpatient procedure.
That's what Dr. Ong, who's one of my partners and the first person here to be doing that, and that's what we've talked about, is we want to shave things down to where they should be. When I was an intern at Penn State, all right, if I was going to fix your inguinal hernia, you would have come in the night before. I would have met you and talked to you, and, you know, I would have prepped you for surgery and done labs and done your EKG and, you know, filled out a consent, had anesthesia come and see you, and you spend the night in the hospital. And the next morning you go and you get operated on, then you get admitted back to your same bed, and I would see you again. And then you might be there for that night, maybe even the next night before you went home. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the cost for that in the old, you know, in those days. Now, if you have an inguinal hernia repaired, you come in and get done and go home, and you're probably in the hospital total for about 3 hours rather than 3 days.
Wow.
The right answer is probably somewhere in between those two things. But this is one of those devices, you know, one of those situations where, since this is new, we're actually going to err on the side of being cautious. But the idea being that we could move this forward to where this could actually be an outpatient procedure, I think is extremely high.
So I imagine that's a pretty big barrier for a lot of folks too. So that's great that there's the potential for this to become something that's much more accessible in the long run. But in the time being, how would someone access this procedure? I know we're going to put some notes into the podcast for folks who are interested and give them some resources like the video you mentioned and how to contact you. But you mentioned it's very new. Apart from Providence Swedish, are there many other places across the country that are doing this procedure yet?
Not this side of Mississippi. We're the only ones. And don't hold me to this. I know I'm on public here, but I think Cleveland Clinic is and Rochester is doing it, but I'm not 100% sure. But I know there's at least two or three other places in the East, but we're the only place in the West. Right now we initially put out the telephone number for Swedish Surgical Specialists, which is my group, and we just got inundated with calls. So now we do have a dedicated phone line. Do you want me to give that to you now?
Sure.
So it's 206-386-6959. And that number is dedicated just for histotripsy, and it became official on the 1st of February. We also are in the process of putting together a dedicated email address. I'm not going to give that to you yet, even though I have it written here on this piece of paper, because we have not yet been able to find a way. God bless technology, but IT hasn't been able to find a way to get that ticket through. So I don't want people emailing us and having it go off into the ether layer somewhere. So we're going to try to post that on social media and everything as soon as we have that up and running. But I just checked again this morning before I talked to you all, and it's not there yet. You know, I guess I just happened, my eyes fell on this thing about geographic disparities. And, you know, it certainly is, with Seattle being the only place in the West, there's somewhere in California that they're trying to get up and running. But that's a lot of real estate, right? You know, I went to college in Montana. It always impressed me that the state of Montana was one time zone all by itself, you know. So those are big empty areas of which, unfortunately, this disease process doesn't just happen to people in populated areas. So it would be, again, important to get a hold of us. You know, we could do things like, you know, get people CT scans and have their physicians forward those to us and do a lot of the screening and stuff ahead of time before making people come over here. But somewhere along the line, that's going to have to be what has to happen. It's one of the things in my mindset that I think is really special about where I work. I bleed Swedish blue. I've been here my entire career. I was supposed to have been operated on here, but the cab driver took my mom to a different hospital by accident. I spent my entire life here, and my entire family has received all of their care here. So I think it's great that we're doing this, but we're in the greater Seattle area. We have a fair draw from around the state, but Providence then gives us that extra larger area. When you think about healthcare delivery system that's 51 hospital size that goes from Alaska to Southern California to West Texas and Montana, that's a pretty good catchment area. And those people are people that we should reach out to who feel comfortable getting in touch with us, because we have such easy interchange of information within that 51 hospital system.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm curious, how did you first find out about this procedure, and what made you decide that it was something we needed to have at Providence Swedish?
So I have a lot of responsibility, not only to what I do in my clinical practice, but because of my administrative role, what I do within all of our surgical specialties. And the people who have really, that this really jumped up at, and I really need to give credit to, is a couple of our surgical oncologists on the urology side is Dr. James Porter, who is a world-renowned prostate cancer surgeon and specialist. And then Evan Ong, who is a surgical oncologist trained at Roswell Park that I was fortunate enough to recruit from the University of Arizona. And those two people had just basically heard about this. Mm-hmm. And they came to me and I investigated it. I've got a lot of responsibility for kind of trying to make sure I keep the purse strings tight, right? But this was one that was very clear to any of us that looked at it, that dealt with these folks at all, that this was something that we needed to really push. And so I was thankful that our administration here at Swedish was, you know, receptive to kind of going out on a limb a little bit and doing something new and different. And at least so far, I haven't got fired. You know, we hit a home run. I think it's working out pretty well. And only time will tell how many people we can help. But I'm pretty excited about it. But that's how it came about. And then the Histosonic people came here, spent some time with them, and it's been awesome.
Well, that's fantastic. So let's talk about some things you want to make sure our listeners take away from this conversation on histotripsy and liver cancer treatments. What really stands out to you is the most important thing to remember if you're considering this?
Okay. This should be looked upon from here on out as one more tool in our toolbox, all right? We have surgery, we have chemotherapy, we have radiation therapy, we have ablation therapy, and all of these may be the right thing to do particularly, but sometimes they can't be done or they're not the right thing, and now we have histotripsy. That may, over time, be pushed to the top of the line, but people should realize that it is now just yet another tool in our toolkit. But particularly what's really important is it's a tool that we can use when maybe in the past, all the other ones weren't working. So it's not where we necessarily want to jump to right off the bat, at least not yet. So people, I would want a patient, if they came to see us and we said, okay, you know what, that's not really what you need this, not to be like disappointed that they weren't getting the new car off the assembly line like I was talking about. So I think the one takeaway from this is to realize now that this is one more tool that we have to use, but it may end up being the ultimate tool and we don't know yet. And that whole idea about that abscopal effect, of the fact that it could treat other things that right now we do need to radiate or do chemotherapy for, that is probably the number two thing I'd want to bring up is that, wow, you know what I mean? This is still possibly one of those sky's the limit things where we think back 20 years from now and think, God, you know, can you believe that Horton used to just cut these out and now we do this? And so I think that's probably the second really big important thing. And then the third thing I had put on my list of takeaways was to make sure people had that dedicated line number, because those people now can field the call and tell folks exactly what it is that they need to do to get some treatment and some help from us. But I would highly recommend going through your doctor at your, you know, in your local place first, so we can get the information we need to make the appropriate decision. Did that answer that question okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I got to say, I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan, but I definitely feel like this procedure is taking us a little step closer to the amazing medical tech you see on that show.
Brendan, I can't believe you just said that, because I am not a Star Trek fan, but I went to see the movie. I can't remember which one it was where they had to go back in time to, because they were talking to the whales or something. I can't remember what it was.
Star Trek 4.
Okay, Star Trek 4. So, but remember, they're running through the hospital and there's a lady on a gurney and she's on her way to get dialysis, and Doc stops and goes, what? And he gives her like a pill or something. And then the next time through, they run through and she goes, I grew a new kidney. And Doc was saying, you know, I can't believe these guys are still doing something like dialysis. That, what you just said, is something I did in a meeting when I was trying to push this whole idea to everybody. And Horton said, one of the CEOs said, Horton, I didn't know you were a Star Trekkie. I said, I wasn't. But I remember that movie because that's what I thought of when I heard this.
Yeah, it certainly gives me a lot of inspiration. Thank you so much, Dr. Horton, for coming to talk with us today. And thank all of you for joining us on Talk with a Doc. We look forward to continuing the important conversation on health and wellness with more experts from Providence in future episodes. As I said before, we'll be posting all kinds of information into the show notes so you can learn more about this procedure and give the folks at Providence Swedish a call if you think this might be right for you. Make sure to listen to all our shows on Lit Live Radio under Future of Health Radio or your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on social media. We can be found on X and Facebook at Providence and Instagram under Providence Health Systems. To learn more about our mission, programs, and services, go to providence.org. And please remember, the information provided during this program is for educational purposes only. You should always consult your healthcare provider if you have any questions regarding a medical condition or treatment. Thanks for listening, and remember, at Providence, we see the life in you.